again, the particularity of Lilian Rossi in her teaching is that what is fantastic, which I've never seen with any other teacher, is that she was understanding, technically speaking, she could know exactly what was missing in your playing.
Hi, I'm Leah Roseman, and this is my podcast, Conversations with Musicians, which I hope inspires you through the personal stories of a diversity of musicians with in-depth conversations and great music that reveal the depth and breadth to a life in music. Jan Passabella-Biste is a French violinist with a beautiful, warm intensity to his playing, and in this episode, we're focusing on his album Robert Schumann and His Universe with pianist Bertrand Giraud. Jan talks about some of his mentors in France and Switzerland, many interesting and inspiring musical highlights, and his perspectives on how music has helped him through some difficult challenges. Like all my episodes, you can watch this on my YouTube channel or listen to the podcast, and I've also linked the transcript to my website, leahroseman.com. Also, you can use the timestamps to navigate the episode. It's a joy to bring these inspiring episodes to you every week, and I do all the many jobs of research, production, and publicity. You can support this independent podcast through both the unique collection of merchandise as well as through my Ko-fi page. Have a look at the description of this episode, where you'll find all the links.
Hi, Jan. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you for receiving me.
I was thinking about where to start. I think it would be interesting to talk about your recent album of Schumann and His Universe. And right before this interview, I was just Googling Schumann to see his dates. I was curious to know when he died. And then, you know, I was reminded Robert Schumann only lived 46 years. And the other thing that struck me when I Googled him is that Clara's name actually came up first, because now she's getting the attention she deserves. So she actually came up first when I Googled Schumann.
Yes, she was a wonderful pianist, but also a composer. And she has composed few things, and which are beautiful, by the way. And we find the romances of Clara Schumann of Opus 22 on the CD album. So it's about Schumann and his universe. So we didn't want to forget anyone. So his wife, of course, and his friends, best friends.
Mm-hmm. And the pianist that you recorded with, Bertrand Giraud, did you have a long-standing relationship with him?
Oh, actually, I got to know him when I was 17 years old, and that was almost by coincidence. I was looking for a pianist to play around in the area where I live, in the south of France. And I don't remember I got his contact, but then I asked him if he was okay to come and do those concerts, play those concerts with me, and he said yes. And it was very nice. But then after this, we lost contact for many years until maybe 2019 or 18, where I reached him out again, proposing this to record this album.
And your choice of repertoire, Schumann, I believe he wrote three violin sonatas, and you chose the third.
Yeah, the third sonata, yes. We all know the first and second violinists themselves, mm-hmm. but they do not know well the number three, and there is, well, sonata number three, which is linked with the FAE sonata, composed together with Johannes Brahms, his best friend of that time, and Albert Dietrich, who was his best student. So why did I record together with FAE? Is because the two movements Robert Schumann composed for the FAE, we find them again in the third sonata. So it just copied the two movements and added two more movements to compose his third sonata.
And these romances of Clara Schumann's, I've loved them for many years. I perform them as well. I really particularly love the first one. I was hoping we could share that as part of this episode.
Yes, sure. I have been playing it, and it's perhaps one of my favorite. Yeah.
This is the first romance by Clara Schumann on Jan's album with pianist Bertrand Giraud. In the show notes, you'll find the links.
So you went to the Paris Conservatoire, correct?
I studied in Paris, but not in the Superior Conservatory. I did my master in the Superior School of Music in Geneva, in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was going to ask you about that experience because coming from France and, you know, it's a French culture, but it's different. You study with Jean-Pierre Wallez.
Yes, in Geneva, yes, exactly.
Well, we kind of skipped ahead to Geneva, but I was curious about your childhood as a violinist because you excelled very young, you did many, many competitions, and I was curious what that felt like for you.
I am coming from a family of musicians. My father was a flutist, and also conductor, and now he's composing. He has done many things in his life, also conducting, directing music school. He also created many of them. So in my family, we are all playing an instrument. So how did it feel like? I mean, I was so much loving violin, and I was gifted, which was a chance, because I could just take the violin and impress around, and impressing by not practicing so hard. I was not a very hard worker, just by pleasing myself. So that was great. So those exams I did when I was young was fun for me, because I easily got the best place, the first prize. So that was like a nice challenge, like a game. So after when I grew up, and then we start to be among really great players, and it requires to practice harder. Then we start to feel more stress, and it's less fun, because we realize more what we are doing on stage. The maturity make us realize that it's big, and when we are a child, we are a bit naive in a way, so we don't realize what we are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I listened to some of your father's pieces that you've recorded, and I particularly liked his sonata number 1, A mon fils Yann pour sa maman.
Mm-hmm.
So can you speak about that title?
We lost my family and I, we lost my mom when I was about to be 19 years old. It was in 98, from a cancer. Mm-hmm. And then my father was we were all devastated. And then he wanted to compose something in her memory, and for me to play for her, for us. And then he composed that. So that is the first movement of this sonata for solo violin, and which is, I even forgot how much touching it was because I played it long time ago and after no more, and he decided to perform it again on stage, and I could see the, I don't know if it's a story together with, because I explained to people, but people are very much touched and some cries of emotions. So I believe, because I, independently from the story, it's very touching music. So it's, I find it beautiful.
You'll find the link for this live performance in the show notes. This is Sonata Number 1, A Mon Fils Yann pour Sa Maman by Gérard Passabelle-Labiste.
Your mother knew that you were doing well with violin.
She was used to come, of course, because I started to give concert. I was 8 years old, so my father was organizing that. He was director of music school, and very early on, I started to perform. My mother was always here. Even on my exam, when the audience was allowed, But she was usually not staying during the performance. She was going out because she was a heartbeat was beating. It was so fast that she thought that I might feel it in a way and be disturbed. So she preferred to go out during exams. That was very, very sweet offer. And yeah, but usually she was, and all concert, she was here. And yes, supporting my father, who was my first teacher, supporting me, because she knew I was gifted. So yes, I had her entire support, and that was great to feel.
Was she a musician as well?
She was loving to listen to it, but she was not musician herself. But then, by hearing music every day on everyday basis, she become she started to develop a very good hearing, and then she could sometimes say things very, very impressive about what was not good enough, what could be played better. And someday I made a test to her, and I asked her if she could recognize if I sing to her or play beginning of violin concerti, if she could recognize the composer. And because I was not sure, but she did, and she said, "But do you think your mother is stupid or something like that?" And I never forgot that.
So did you grow up in the south of France?
Yes, I am from Paris, but every holidays, vacations, we came here in the family home. And then, yes, this is why I can say I grew up here. And I really love this area of France.
So your father, Gérard, he was a violinist as well. He is a violinist as well. You said he was
a flutist.
Flutist. So what did he teach you then?
Oh, because I was 3 years old, for the little story. My father came back from work at home and came back home. And then he heard me singing, whistling while playing with toys. And then he asked my mom, what Jan is singing? And she said, I don't know. I played a while ago Brahms or something among the CDs we have. And then, I don't know, since then he's singing. And my father listened carefully and he said to my mom, but it's amazing, he's singing in tune. And my mother at this moment, she said to him, "Don't miss him. I mean, you know what you have to do." And then, not long ago after, I was again playing, and there was a TV, there was an orchestra on TV, and my father asked me which instrument I want to play. Then I was disturbed, but I went to the TV and I pointed a violin. I said, "I want to do that." And he said, "You sure you don't want?" I said, "No, I want that." That was maybe Saturday or Sunday. And already on Monday, I had a violin. He went to Rue de Rome in Paris, both the smallest violin, looking like a toy, so much small, I still have it, and brought it home. He was so happy because that first I want to do music, but he was loving violin, actually. So he brought me to the teacher and wanted I start without waiting any more day. And then the teacher said, he's very young, so I would suggest to start that he starts with me in a year and a half, when he will be 4.5 years old, so that he can enjoy his childhood and still play. I think it's necessary. And my father was frustrated, and me, I was disappointed because I couldn't start immediately. So maybe I started a bit with him, I'm not sure about that, but when I started at 4.5 years old, my father was bringing me and staying during the lesson. So I had a second lesson once back home. He was reminding me what the teacher said. So I had like an assistant. So that was great. Yeah, and I think this has helped me to improve fast.
So I was curious about some of your teachers, if you wanted to speak to any of those experiences, you know, the things that helped you as a student.
Liliane Rossi, who is certainly the best teacher I ever had, the best pedagogue I've ever seen. Liliane Béguin-Rossi has been between 30 to 40 years violin soloist at French Orchestre National de France, French National Orchestra. So, and I still see her time to time. And yes, she's the one who really brought me the most. I started to have lessons with her when I was 16 years old, maybe. And then after I went on in Geneva, so I stopped seeing her. And yeah, many years later, which is just a few years ago, I retook contact with her. And actually, I've always been missing her, and I was happy to see her again and to have again lesson with her. That was so great. And yeah, I can say she is one of the two who has really brought me the most as a violinist. Before her, there was, when I was very young, there was Monique Voisin-Vallée, who was a violinist in a French Philharmonic Orchestra, Orchestre Philharmonique de Radio France. She was very nice there, and she has been my very first teacher. Very patient, and for many years, she brought me a lot.
So with Liliane, what about the style of her teaching was so effective for you, do you think?
For me, Liliane Rossi is not only a... I cannot say she's not only a teacher, because to be a very good teacher, it's not only about your skills and your pedagogy. It's something about your personality, your communication, your approach. And Madame Rossi has always been very, how to say, very human. She was really social, very understanding. And this is why I felt really supported and carried during my cursus with her, because there was this approach. She was what she had to be. I mean, not too sweet, not too soft, because I mean, otherwise I would have maybe stopped to practice. But she always had this quality to be a great person as well. And the particularity of Liliane Rossi in her teaching is that what is fantastic, which I've never seen with any other teacher, is that she was understanding, technically speaking, she could know exactly what was missing in your playing. For example, like a car specialist who would be in front of a car and he knows exactly how the car is composed and according to the sound, what is missing, how we could make it better, which piece should we change. Voilà, this is Madame Rossi. Amazing.
Yeah, wonderful.
You're about to hear the Brahms Scherzo from the FAE Sonata. This is on Jan's album, linked in the description. Thank you.
living in Geneva with the mountains is so different than Paris. What was it like when you moved there? And you lived in Switzerland for a while afterwards as well.
Oh, actually, I was living in the French border because it was cheaper. So like many students. I have enjoyed it very much. Alors, at the same time, you know, I lost my mom in March 98, and I succeeded the exam to enter in Jean-Pierre Vallée's class in June of the same year. And I started in September, October. So it was, on one go, very, very hard, because for the first time of my life, I had no more mom, and I was living alone. So that was really abrupt. Very hard. But what I have enjoyed very much is that this music school was really international. Many people from students from different countries were students studying in this music school. So that was very interesting and exciting, I would say. To see all those people from different background, culture, and so on. So yes, I really enjoyed, and I could also I saw first prize from Paris Conservatory, Superior Conservatory, coming in Geneva to make like a master after the first prize with the same teacher I had. So that was very nice, and this made the level to be high.
And you did play in you were a member of the Tonhalle Orchestra in Zurich?
Yes, I was.
For a few years?
2005 to 2009. Oh, that was my best musical experience in life, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very good orchestra. But you did decide to leave.
I will never regret to have, of course, worked there. It's a fantastic orchestra. And I had the chance to work with the best conductor, the best soloist, play in the best concert hall, had great tours. That was fantastic. So, musically speaking, it was just perfect. But now to match with my personal goals and what I was aiming for, which has always been to go toward soloist career or position. Then I started to, I played for an audition in another orchestra in Switzerland for a solo position, which I won. So then I decided to leave. In one hand, I regret. On the other, no, because you know, when you are in an orchestra, you need to maintain your level. Even the orchestra is high. You still have to. So when you do too much, you don't have much apart from orchestra life musically, and you stop practicing or playing technique, making scales. Any orchestra in the world, your level will start to go down. So I really needed a boost to move myself, because I was witness of my level going down. Mm-hmm. Even if I learned a lot to work there, of course. Yes, I needed a change. Yes, I needed a change.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been an orchestra musician for over 30 years now. So I know the challenges of keeping in shape and finding outside projects. And certainly I never aspired to be a soloist. And I can imagine it's hard. It's not like you can just get time off, too, if you want to go do a recital tour or something, right? You're committed to the orchestra.
Yes, I of course, I didn't leave the orchestra. I made sure I would get somewhere before to quit, because this orchestra is one of the best I've ever heard, and the best where I've been playing. This orchestra is in my heart forever, the sound of this orchestra and my time there.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Jan, about auditions for orchestras in Europe, because I'm Canadian, and I'm curious if you do it similar to the way we do things here with screens and so on.
Oh, yeah. There is, nowadays, most of the orchestra are using screen. So it depends when they remove it. Sometimes that is more rare. The whole competition is like eliminatory. It's behind the screen, the whole auditions, the three rounds. Except, of course, if there is a music chamber tour, which is the fourth tour, for example, then there is no screen. But most of the orchestras, they remove from the second round or the third, the final. Depends, but nowadays, yeah, it's some, a very common thing.
And what was your experience of preparing for orchestra auditions? Did you get coaching from your teachers, or were you kind of on your own that way?
Yes, after Geneva, when I started to interest myself to work a bit in orchestra, I didn't have any idea about how to play what you are asked for an audition, those little pieces from a symphony or opera. And if you didn't learn with someone who knows about it, then you just play like you play a concerto, and this is completely wrong. Because you have much less freedom than for a concerto. You need to be very specific about the dynamics, the rhythm, everything. Like, really, it's millimeters. So, of course, like everyone at the beginning, I didn't know at all how I should play that. And I had the chance to meet Jean Piguet, who was been a violin solo of Swiss Romande Orchestra for many years. And because he was in one of my exam, my final exam in Geneva, that was for chamber music, for the quartet, he was in the jury, so he made me compliment, nice compliments, and then after I thought I should maybe go to him to, but actually I went to him not for him to teach me how to play orchestra work, but I wanted the support for like a solo career. So I don't know. I remember he has liked me, so I reached him out. He was okay to see me, and I played. And I still remember his compliment. Then I don't know how we came to the orchestra thing, but he was the very right person to teach that. So it was so great, and I really learned how to play in audition and in orchestra because of him. He brought me very much. I owe him a lot.
When I was researching you, Jan, it came up that you had studied some Japanese.
Oh, a little bit, because I've been, would say, about 10 times in Japan for professional reasons, and also tourist reasons. So it's a country I really like. I mean, the way of living is easy. The food is very good. Even fast food there is very nice. Which is, I mean, a bit the opposite of France, because of France you can have a great food as you can have the worst ever. So, but in Japan, I never tasted something bad. Never. So I always enjoyed. Yeah, always enjoy to go there. Life is easy.
Mm-hmm. And you know some Malgache, which is a language from Madagascar. Is that a family connection?
Yes, exactly. My mom was a daughter of Métis, from Métis Malgache. My grandmother, so her mom was from Madagascar. And her father was French, from Normandia. So I have some Malgache blood. And even we cannot see that very much. Yes, I was used. I had the opportunity to go there several times. My father remarried with Malagash, so he's half a year in Madagascar, and the rest in France. Now these days, more in Madagascar because he loves this country. So yes, so of course going there, and it was fun for me to learn a bit some basics. and the language of my mom, because she was born in France, but at the age of 3 years old, she went to Madagascar until 16. 16 years old, she came to Paris. So it was all her childhood. She has often mentioned about how great it was this time she had in her heart. And I remember she few words she was, Malgash words she was saying. So I was very happy to learn a bit about this language, yeah.
So what are your impressions of Madagascar?
Very nice to me. Especially where my father stays, which is Sainte-Marie, which is part of Madagascar, but it's really in the Indian Ocean. So much nicer than the capital who still suffers poverty and things we can see, so it's not so I would say the best place to stay. So Malagash people are very welcome. Welcoming tourists, foreigners, there are many. And what is interesting about Madagascar is that they have this mix of culture between African and Asian. So long ago, Malaysia has occupied Madagascar. So on their face, we can see some Asian signs, and in the, I would say in their behavior as well. I would say they are more Asian than African in terms of behaving.
And I was wondering, in your role as a soloist and chamber musician, if you've collaborated with composers, I mean, other than your father.
No, only my father. I was not against to work with any other. I didn't have the opportunity. This didn't come up. So, and for now, only my father. And I enjoy a lot. We have really this connection as musician, most of all, because I can understand his music. I feel it, like I compose it myself. And he really loved my way to play it. And sometimes, not even what is written, I propose something and he likes my approach and ideas. So it's like a perfect team. It's really enjoyable. It's really fun to work together.
And you said your dad started composing later in life? Like, he wasn't always a composer?
He was kind of always composing, but more arranging. And he became composer mostly after my mom's departure. So like full time. He stopped teaching and even playing flute. And now he's composing really full time. It's his joy in life.
I was wondering about if you want to share helpful habits you have in terms of your routine as a violinist or just as a person.
I'm used now. Because before, no, when I was still in Tonhalle, I was not doing that. Now, I would say I'm really regularly practicing scales every day. And this is very good. Very good. Scales mostly third, sixth, and more. Because for the hand shape, that's very good. That's very good to keep in shape and... Yes, playing accords, double stop, triple stop, and more. It's I would say essential. So this is my I would say my daily yoga. and now I can enjoy exercising. When I was younger, I was hating that. So when I was doing it was just for Papa to hear me. But I was thinking of something else. You know, I was just doing for doing it. But I didn't feel this. I understood the sense of doing that, but I didn't have any fun, so I was forcing myself. So I was not really doing it properly. So now I do it with pleasure because actually I learned to enjoy it, and that's great.
And you enjoy doing yoga?
Oh, yes. Real yoga I'm doing on a regular basis. I think it's very important for the posture because lying posture is not so natural. It's not like... We don't have this comfort and this stability like we have when we are cellist. So we are suspending in the air, that it's not very natural. So we got to have some kind of pain or things like this when we practice a lot. And mostly because when we practice, we are usually not thinking of our positions and not especially checking in the mirror. So, and after we feel some, so I think it's absolutely necessary, and this has helped me a lot since I do that.
Hi, just a quick break from the episode. You may also be interested in my episodes with Nimrod Borenstein, Omo Bello, Julia McLean, the Euclid Quartet, Ji-Hoon Kim, and many more, going back to 2021. It's a joy to be able to bring these meaningful conversations to you every week, but this project cost me quite a bit of money and lots of time. Please support this series through either my merchandise store or on my Ko-fi page. You'll find the links in the show notes. For the merch, it features a unique design by artist Steffi Kelly, and you can browse clothes, phone cases, notebooks, water bottles, and more, everything printed on demand. You'll also find the links to sign up for my newsletter, where you'll get access to exclusive information about upcoming guests. Now, back to Jan.
I thought it might be interesting to talk about some of your musical memories. I was wondering if you had favorite violinists growing up that you got to hear live or recordings you love to hear.
My favorites are among those who are already dead, not only. But if I speak about my very special one, I would say it's Christian Ferras. Yes, who was feeling and playing the music like no one. This kind of, I was explaining to a colleague recently, his music expression makes like pain inside, and it's inside of you, and this pain is like a drug. It's like addictive. It's a pain which is good, difficult to describe, but that's the way Christian Ferras. And another one was playing like that, Jacqueline Dupré, also. They are intense musician, very intense, and yes, they are my favorite.
The first name you said, was it Christian Ferras? I did not hear what it was.
Christian Ferras. Christian Ferras. Okay, thank you. French violinist. Christian Ferras. Yes.
And you mostly grew up in Paris. Do you have memories of certain concerts or, I don't know, attending the opera or different styles of music that were very memorable?
I remember when I went to Pleyel Concert Hall different times, when I went to hear, to watch Perlman's performance, Isaac Perlman. There was also another time, I think that was there's a name just flying. A lady was being noticed by Karajan.
Oh, Anne Sophie Mutter.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, but a while ago, when you asked me which violinist I like. Of course, I spoke about my favorite one, but there are other which I really love, like Arthur Grumio. I want to say, because Christian Ferras is not the only one. Isaac Perlman, I like it. I've always loved him. But Arthur Grumio, his way to play Mozart is really Mozart teacher for me. We forget the violin. There's no more violin, no more technical things. There's a voice. And I think it's a way, one of those rare musicians who understood how to play Mozart, I think. So Arthur Grumio, Cédric Perlman, still alive, Vengerov, Maxim Vengerov. There was many others, but I cannot mention them all. So if you want to hear more names, I can just tell you.
It's interesting.
About, of course, Anne Sophie Mutter, yes, I spoke about her. Great, I always loved her playing, very engaged, very powerful, very... now still among living people, there is Julia Fischer. I really like Julia Fischer. It's very, very clean, very... pure. I have played a Mozart concerto with her. I was in the orchestra, in Tonhalle Orchestra, accompanying her, and her Mozart was super class, very clean. She's a great player. There was Augustina Delitzsch, she was really amazing. Because whatever he plays, it's always super clean. And even as violinist, sometimes there is a moment in concerti, it's you never hear that completely super super clean because it's very difficult. But Augustina Delitzsch, she can. So whatever he plays, it's always super clean, and you wonder, does he have a secret or something? Because it does better than any other. So he's amazing. He's really a real big violinist.
Yes, I've
Yes.
had the fortune to hear him live a couple of times. Wonderful.
Oh yeah, must be so great. I didn't have the chance to hear him alive. So about concert memories, there are those, and there are more, but then I was younger. There was yes, I was younger when I heard, when I watched Mozart violin, viola concerto with Augustin Dumay violin, and Gérard Cosset viola. I was young at that time, and I also heard Pierre Amoyal in a Beethoven concerto. So, but there was different concert I've watched. I have the autograph, the sign of Itzhak Perlman. I heard him also later in Zurich. It was still, even his age, it was still, it's always beautiful. Right? As soon as he plays the violin, it's beautiful. It's just, it's very much singing. I love his sound, his vibrato is so generous. And I think this man, I've met him once, but I can't say I know him, but I think he's a generous person. I can tell, I can feel, can see. Yes.
Now, on your website, you have this quote, I think it's yours, "Play as if tomorrow does not exist."
That's my phrase. Yes, I have been a bit stealing it, if I may say, when I watched the movie Shine. There was a teacher of David Elfgott who say something like this: play like tomorrow does not exist. And so I want to be honest and say it's actually, this sentence does not come from me, but this is the way I see and feel music, so this is why I took it. And actually, I even wrote somewhere on my Facebook, like, leave love and play the instrument like tomorrow does not exist. Yes, with this same intensity, like there is no tomorrow, so I give all now. Yes.
Now, how did the pandemic affect you when everything was suddenly shut down?
For me, it was a bit hard because I couldn't be on stage anymore. And I think a musician not being able any longer to play in front of an audience is just dying. And I was dying in that way. I had a chance to meet someone who organized a concert for me alone, a violin solo at a place. And that was so great that I could play again after, because after many months. I could play again, and I was even, I had this new anxiety. It's like a training. It's like when you go to fitness, your muscles and so on. And it's the same on stage. If you don't go for a while and you come back on stage, you have like a new anxiety. So I was very anxious, like it's very, my very first concert. But it went well, and it was so great because I was like retrieving myself. I was quite satisfied with my playing. I could retrieve myself emotionally, musically speaking. And I remember I cried during the break. I went to the toilet and cried. It was very strong. So happy to refine myself with my instrument, with the violin. Yes.
Yeah, for myself, when we started playing again, it was live streams. We did a lot of live streams, and that felt weird because there's this permanence. It's not just like playing a concert in the moment, and the audience is so far.
Yes.
So that was strange for me.
Yeah. And there was even stranger than this when there was those concert hall with
Yeah.
no audience. That's just terrible. Just terrible. Or so, like, I don't know how many meters between chairs when I watch Berliner Philharmonic playing. They were very far from each other with masks, and it's almost like a bad joke, you know. And then you say, it can't be real. We couldn't go so down. So you of course really hope every day that we'll come back to normal life again, because this is all except what humanity requires, people needs. We need contact with each other. It's terrible to otherwise it's just a spirit dying. I mean, it was a very, very great challenge, I think, for everyone. But for us musicians, it was very frustrating not to be able to play in front of someone, unless at home. I think it was already great if we could play in front of a friend or something, or like that, because it's like death.
You're about to hear the second romance of Robert Schumann, Opus 94, from Jan's album with Bertrand Giraud, Robert Schumann et son univers.
Thank you.
I was also curious to talk about the kind of ecosystem of music in France, because you do have your conservatoire system. But what is music like in public schools for average children?
I remember at my time, but it's long ago, I had the chance that to be able to have managed hour, I mean, at school, so that I could study in conservatory. So it was not, it was a special scheduled class to allow me to have lesson and to have time also for practicing. So that was great. Conservatory system is not that great. Because when a kid wants to start the instrument, then we want the institution, the system want to force him to study solfège first. And the problem is that we bother the kid who was excited to start the instrument, who already hear it in mind, but then he cannot touch it because there is this, I don't find that very clever. He must study solfège like for a minimum a year time before touching the instrument, and many gave up because they don't see the point. You know, it's like the kids can see the toy, but he cannot touch it. So it was very bothering, and it's very bothering to learn solfège alone. Ideally, it has to be taught together at the same time as the instrument. But if you want to, you have to learn solfège before touching the instrument. I understand, and more, I mean, kids, they don't have the patience that we have when we are grown up. So they just give up, and that's such a pity. It's a right system.
I've heard this from other French musicians, it's curious to me, because, of course, we have nothing like that. But I was curious about just public schools. You know, when I look at, like, I'm in Canada, but I look at the United States, they have a much more robust music education in their schools, for sure, than we do in Canada. So I was kind of curious, bands, orchestras, choirs, all this sort of ecosystem that honestly builds an audience for our music, I think, as well.
So at school, I know that there is, still now, I guess, there is a music class. Like we have for sport, there's something about music, but I won't say that France is a country example. Gives the best example about, yes, and also because our economy is, I mean, our country is spending a lot for sport, for all what is sport. We invest much more for sport than culture and music, and that's a pity. Sport is good, but without culture, what are we?
Yeah. Now, you have done well in so many competitions, and I was curious if you wanted to speak about some of your best competitions, maybe for furthering your career or that led to great performance opportunities, or how to choose which ones to do.
I can speak about those competitions. There's not so many where I felt something very special while playing, but it's something personal. I'll have to what to say about this competition is better to. I mean, I don't need to have done myself because we know that best competitions such as Reine Elizabeth or Queen Elizabeth or Paganini. You should be able to, I don't know if you can make a career, really career, because it depends of so many factors, but it's supposed to open you the way, at least a minimum. And those less high competitions, it's difficult nowadays. I mean, even great competition, it's better to have several. And a first grand prize better than only one. So, but as I said, it depends on so many factors, the social, your contact. Some people speak about luck also, your economical situation, and also luck in terms of sometimes it's more helpful when we know someone who knows someone. So, which is about concert or artistic agency, or rather than, because if you don't just show off like, hey, I'm a violinist, I'm looking for an agency, and if and for an agency, and you have a very strong curriculum, but then you are not known, like recommended, or unless you are a superstar, but then you are not known. No, they didn't hear. They didn't hear about you from someone they know. So it always helps to know someone they know, they trust. You know this. Yeah, there is this contact, which is very important. So the human part about and recommendation is super important, in fact. Yes, you can suddenly have the door opening to you because the person you both know the same person, and you trust this person, rather than it can be you can struggle really, really, really long if you are not introduced by someone or something like that. So, and now to speak about those competitions, especially in my mind, my memory, in my heart, because something special happened. I would say first there was my Virtuosity Prize, my master in Geneva, but it's not international competition. It was my master. Why was it special? Because I felt strong on stage. I remember before playing, I was in the practicing room and I was anxious. And then I was thinking, how can I, you know, I was trying to comfort myself. And I was looking for a sound, you know, I was about to start with Bach, the sound to have. And then that morning, I've listened Sherin playing Bach, and I remembered it, and then I tried to have his sound. It was just like I turned on the somehow in my mind, and I went on stage and I play. I would say differently. I cannot say I play like Shearing, but I really felt like the sound I heard from him, and I tried to approach. I had it on stage. That was amazing, and that was in 2001. And I had my mother pictures in my shirt, returned, so that it's a bit discreet, because she died in 1998, and I wanted she is here on that day helping of. Definitely she was here, but she didn't need any pictures, but me, I needed. So that was special to me. After about international competitions, there was Tibor Varga competition in 2001, still in 2001. It was during summer. Why? Because I went there thinking like, oh, I have no chance. I will go there just to, you know, to see, evaluate myself. But I will be with so strong player, I have no chance. And I was a bit type of preparing always last minute. So I had 2 weeks before, I realized that, oh, I have 2 weeks left. What do I do? I go to the competition or shall I cancel? And then, of course, a part of me wanted to cancel because it's so scary to have only 2 weeks time. Even... of course, some of the program was the same that I played for my master. It's when you stop practicing it, it's you have almost, in a way, always like to start from zero. So I said, another part of me said, Jan, so you have balls, assume what you did, and just practice hard. That's what I did. I was practicing around 8 hours. I don't know if I did that 2 weeks, but I did that for more than a week for sure, seven days to 10 days. And then I went there. I did a very strong first round. And I remember I played in the morning. I don't like morning. I'm not a matinal person. And I was unlucky. It was, you know, draw of lottery. I was maybe the very first one of the competition. Oh, no. I went there and I did really my best. But I still thought it's not enough. But at least I was satisfied. I did my best. And when we, several days later, because there were many candidates, as the result came, I remember I heard my name first, but that's normal because it was by playing order. And then when I heard my name, I asked my colleague, another violinist competitor beside, I said, did you hear my name? I was not sure. I wanted to make sure I heard my name. And I was so, I cried. So it was my very first international competition. I cried of happiness. We were about 50 people, and in semifinal were only 11 or 12. Oh my God! And I remember I went to the jury, you know, and the I was unshaking and shaking the hand. So, like thanking them, you know, and he's asking me, but you passed to the semifinal, right? I say yes. I say, why do you come already to us? I say, because I want to thank you. I'm so happy. I'm okay now. If it doesn't go farther, but it's like I've realized dreams. So thank you so much. That was in 2001, special to me. But there are a few others. There is. In 2012, Valsesia Musica in Italy. That year, there was only two rounds instead of three. I don't know. I can't remember why. From the first round, it was a concerto, first round only. Concerto, one movement of concerto, and directly the final. If I am not, yeah, it was something like this. I've played, I remember, why is it special? Because it was very intense. Very intense. I went on stage, and I remember I asked my uncle if he could, you know, send me vibes, all that. And when I went on stage, I felt so strong, unbeatable, and I played better than when I was home or anywhere else. It was amazing. I could decide to do something musically or something new. I didn't fear. New just on stage, I was succeeding everything. And I felt like I was making one with everything around me. People, the concert hall, the music piece, the pianist, everything I was making, I was feeling so strong and so high. And there was a moment in Tchaikovsky, in the first movement, when we are going very high like this. It's a singing melody, you know, very high. And I felt like I was like an eagle, very high in the sky, on the top of a mountain with a beautiful panorama. I felt like this. And after playing, I cried nonstop. I couldn't. It was so strong. I couldn't hold myself. I cried for several minutes nonstop. So much it was strong. So that's, I never retrieved that. I regretted. I said, what's the recipe? How to experience this again? Because it's unforgettable and it's so amazing. It's much better than any kind of drug. It's fantastic. Fantastic. And that is in my memory, in my heart forever, and never had it again like that. And in 2014, when I won my first grand prize in a Padova international competition in Italy, a bit the same, but different. I felt like I was my final stage with Tchaikovsky. I was like also uniting with everything around me. And I felt like I was a team for myself on the violin. It's difficult to explain, but it was like we are several. One is thinking about, for example, the bow, one about the left hand, one about the orchestra, one about the sound check. I felt like I was 10 people myself. It was different from 2012, less intense, but it was also a very special experience and very unique, I would say. So those are very memorable for me and unforgettable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. Some of the stuff you're saying, you know, about inhabiting almost a character like an actor, like when you said you thought of sharing and then you went out and played Bach. I've used that technique sometimes as well with extreme nerves of just feeling like I'm somebody else. And I think what it enables us to do is maybe get rid of the ego and it's just the music, because we take ourselves, our nervous wreck out of the occasion, out of the equation, you know what I mean?
Yes. Whenever when we play, which is competition or concert, we play a piece, and probably a masterpiece. There is a composer, there is a great person who wrote it with his own story. So remaining humble is important, I think, if we don't want to go over the music, real music frame. My teacher was saying, how we serve the music, but don't use it. So in French, it's even better because it... Sert la musique, mais ne t'en sert pas. So it's the same verb at the end. But yes, and it's, I think it's very important. Of course, we give of ourselves according to our own story, and it has to be so. It's important. But it's like a partnership between the composer and the interpreter. We can find similarities with both stories. And it's like resonating. The composer who's probably dead from long time, and similar experience on that moment, he was experiencing that, and in your life you have already experienced that. So it's like doing echo in you, and it's magical in a way, very magical, and you communicate with the audience. So, but it's important to remember that you serve music. If you really want to do yourself, you should play your own music. But if you read a text, you need to respect the text, the period, and everything. So it's just, when you put off yourself, it's just, I would say, minimum.
Now, have you written any of your own cadenzas for concertos, for example?
I wanted to. I didn't, but I wrote cadenza for Mozart Serenade. There is a moment where there is a violin soloist with the orchestra, mm-hmm. and the conductor said that, or invited me to write my own cadenza or something like that. So I did. I was quite satisfied, quite happy of what I did. We can find it somewhere on YouTube. I will send you if I retrieve those videos. The music, I didn't keep it. At the end of the concert, someone told me, oh, you forgot. And I said, oh, maybe it was the conductor. I said, I give it to you. Now if it's to do again, of course I keep. And I mean, I just gave it. And I don't really mind if someone, if I hear someday someone say that it's him who wrote. I will not, my ego will not suffer. But I mean, I didn't even think that... yeah, so I would do differently today. So I think I can still play if I listen to the video, I will remember it, but I don't have the score anymore.
So I'm curious, what are two or three of your most favorite concertos to perform?
Oh, I will speak about what I did in my life in the order, and the order doesn't mean that I prefer the first better than the third, for example, but I started with a Sibelius when I was in Geneva. The first year, after 1 year, we had an exam to enter in master, and then I played the first movement of Sibelius, I remember. And and a little quote about that is that at the end, there is many octava notes. And I have never been so comfortable about, and also I was reluctant to practice them, you know, fingered octava. So I did them 1/4, mm-hmm. all of them. And I did them like, I mean, as good as if I was... A better fingered octava player, they were in tune, actually. So that was Sibelius. And then afterwards, what did I play for my master? I played Shostakovich, really like Shostakovich. I played the third and fourth movement of the first one in A minor. I think it's the first concerto. So exciting, yes. Exciting to play, so great. It's a great music. And quickly after Geneva, I had like five concerts. First it was in 2000, 2001. I had few concerts, like three concerts with Brahms. Yes, I wanted to play Brahms since long time. So, but we didn't have a real orchestra. So, I mean, the effective was smaller. But and I remember we didn't have what we were lacking different wind player. And my friend, I had a friend who was saxophonist, and she played a part. What is great with saxophone is that there is a power of brass, but there is a fineness of wood, and it was absolutely not shocking. After the year la later, in 2002, we had more people and a bigger orchestra, and I played it like five times successively, and that was so exciting. Oh yes, I said, oh, I could do that all my life. That Brahms, and then Tchaikovsky came, I think, afterwards. Tchaikovsky has been my very first concerto, my dream concerto, my first love. I was still a kid, and I remember I had a tape of Christian Ferras performing. And that is, yes, was my favorite, I would say, my precious stone, this concerto with him. So I always wanted, so I didn't, always wanted to play Tchaikovsky, but I didn't start with Tchaikovsky. So it's like, in a way, as if I want not to finish, but to put, when you keep things at the end because they are better. So I kept it for later, and I know it very well by now. I played it so many times, and in 2014, when I won the first grand prize, it's so enjoyable to play it with orchestra. It's magnificent. But I would say Brahms too, and Sibelius too, and Beethoven for sure. Except that Beethoven, I would fear more. And it's if you want to hear the story, I have a story about Beethoven concerto. You want to hear? I was in Geneva, still student, and my teacher said, "So for next time, I want that you study Beethoven concerto." I said, "Okay, bon." I went home. I start practicing, and I found it was sounding horrible, horrible because it requires so much about cleanliness, about intonation, about vibrato. Everything is so delicate. You feel like you are high in the sky on a rope, naked, and there is no feeling, no security, nothing. That was terrible. And at this time, I said, no, I will give up. I will tell my teacher, no. First, it's painful when I practice, but I'm not good enough to study this music yet. So when I saw him, he said, how about a Beethoven concerto? Can you play? I said, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry. I stopped practicing. He said, why? I said, it's too hard for me. It's too difficult. He said to me, because you want to be too fast. Okay, next time we will see each other in about 3 weeks' time, because I didn't see him too regularly. He was busy. He said, don't try to play it immediately now. Practice slowly, little by little, and I can tell you, if you have the patience, it will come. So I did really this effort because it's my teacher, and I have big trust in him. So I started to do what he said, and it was starting to sound, and I was starting to like playing it, and more and more. And after 3 weeks' time, I had the lesson, and he said, so can you play the Beethoven concerto? I said, yes, I did, as you told me. I said, please, I listen. So while playing it, I was always, part of me was waiting to when he will stop me. In a way, hoping he will stop me. But he's not stopping me, and I continue to play again and again. I say, "Oh my God, he will not." He made me play the whole first movement. And when I'm finished, I was like, oh, exhausted emotionally, you know. I turned to him and he said, "I will never forget that because for me it's a very meaningful compliment." He said, "Oh, this concerto is fitting you well." And I said, "Oh my God." But now, if I'm asked to prepare that, I will feel the same, like before. It's terrible, this concerto. And Oistrakh was saying that he will probably never be mature enough to play this concerto. Someone like Igor Oistrakh, when you hear that, you say, okay, no chance for me.
I forget the name of your teacher in Geneva. So which was this
Jean-Pierre
teacher?
Vallès. Jean-Pierre Vallès, yes.
Right. Now, you, on your, I read that you went on tour with Yo-Yo Ma to Japan in 2006. Yes. What was the context for that?
That was when I was working with Tanhalle Orchestra in Zurich. We had different tours. And one of them was in 2006 for several weeks with Yo-Yo Ma in Japan. That was my first time in Japan, and that was amazing, of course. But I have also been on tour with Alfred Brendel, and we finished the tour in Amsterdam Concertgebouw. That was, I think, my first time to play there because I played several times there. And I remember the sound. If you ask me what's the best concert hall sound I've ever met, it's Amsterdam Concertgebouw. It's unique, completely unique, because you have the impression that it's the whatever sound you produce, it's the hall is making it better than it went when it went out at first. You know, it's like shaping your sound. Your sound is so enveloped, so warm, so it's fantastic. And that was, I think, the last concert of Alfred Brendel's life, because after that he was planning to stop, and I felt honored to be playing with him his very last concert. Mm-hmm. So that was there.
Yeah, I grew up with his recordings. I remember those pictures of him with the glasses.
Yeah. On the... And I remember he was like singing when he was playing. So at first I say, am I here? Because you will rarely, when I say rarely, I mean you will never hear a violin singing while playing, because it's more disturbing than... But many pianists actually are doing it. And he was singing loud, like when I was listening to him, I said, I found it disturbing, you know? And yes, it was really, he was singing. There was like two players. We were playing Beethoven concerto.
And now, as a soloist, you went to China and you played the very popular Butterfly
yes.
Lovers concerto
yes,
there.
Yes.
And it was broadcast in China.
Yes, yes. That's unforgettable experience for me, because, and Chinese people, when they do something, I mean, they don't mind what it requires. They will make it shiny, goldy, and spectacular, that Chinese way. So I've been invited to give this performance as soloist with orchestra. But I don't know the concerto, I have no idea. So I've watched online, and I heard Gil Sham playing it. So I inspired a bit myself from it. And I saw also Maxim Vengerov. He gave in a small video concert playing it. So yes, it was very new music for me, because it's like Chinese classical. And it was outside, you know, probably, I don't remember if there was a roof, probably there was a roof, but, and there was so no, you know, there was everything. And I was sharing the concerto with another violinist. So we were replying to each other.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, Chinese girl violinist who plays very well. And then, yes, so she was playing the first part, and I was playing the second part. And in my second part, sometimes she was, when it was high tone, she was playing, because she in this story, there was this myth about two people loving each other. The woman is a princess or so, and the man is just an ordinary person, and then it's impossible love, something like that. I mean, the situation, I think, something like that, but it's impossible love. So to love each other, it's really dramatic. They commit suicide to be able to, and they become butterfly, and at this moment they are free to fly and to love each other. So there was really this dialogue between the lady and the man. So with the violin, yes. So we the appropriate moment in the concerto, we were like replying to each other. And at the end, the very last phrase, we played together. It's a very very special moment. And what was very great for me is that I got greatly applauded, and even during playing, like an opera. We never had that, never experienced that before. It was so amazing because people recognize, they know this story very well, and they know very well the melody. So, and you finish your just you finish your phrase, and people are already applauding all that. It's so exciting. So I was realizing it must be great to be a singer, because when you play concerto, you need to play to wait the very end to get applause. So sometimes people don't know after the first moment they applause. It can be nice. At the same time, it can be annoying because you say, "Oh, lack of knowledge." But it's great to feel like encouraged, carried, loved while playing. It's fantastic. And I remember after there were so many who came, wanted to pictures, make a picture with me. Wanted to have my sign, all that. Wow, I felt like I am a Chinese great artist, And afterwards there was a dinner, and so I was not the only one invited, because there was a piano concerto, also Chinese piano concerto. There was a French girl, a pianist. There was different singers, French, Italian, German, invited. So it was, the repertoire was different pieces. So we were first, we had pictures, we had to say thank you in different languages, all that, this kind of thing. And there's a moment I've been invited to come in front of everyone to receive an interview. And I was feeling a bit shy, because no one got interviewed. It was only me. So I felt shy in front of my colleagues. I felt a bit ashamed in a way, because I was afraid they would, feel bad or offended. I would rather that everyone get an interview, not only me, but actually only me got an interview. And then I was asked, and so I had a translator. I was asked if I did special studies to play so well Chinese music, because I played like I completely understand their music, and it was a super success. And I was felt so honored to hear that. My God, wow! I said no, I didn't. But and then I tried to involve my colleagues, saying, since it's a story about love, as long as we have experienced love, then we can play this music, which is true at the same time. So I think I don't need special skills. If I know about love, I think I can play. Anyone would know how to do that. And then they told me that this performance has been watched by 6 million people, because it was at the same broadcasted online on WeChat. And like made him repeat 6 million. My God, we don't know that here. Wow, is voilà, for different reasons, it's unforgettable experience, and I have been very well welcomed and liked. So it was, yes, it was very nice. I have been Chinese people have been very nice to me.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about concert, like your pre-concert routine, if there are things you do to help you feel calm and centered.
Yes, because I remember in 2014 when I went to the final of the Padova International Competition, which I won, the 2 weeks before, because this competition is special, the two first rounds took place 1 year earlier, and the final was like many months later. And so the 2 weeks before, I was like doing a jogging for the length of the concerto, or even more. Concerto is about 40 minutes, the Tchaikovsky concerto, and I was running for minimum 45 minutes. And I wonder if I didn't double it, because I always heard from my teacher saying that if you want to be able to physically, emotionally and stuff, to handle a program of 1 hour, you need to prepare for 2 hours. So you need to double it to make sure. So, but that was about an hour every day jogging to be fit physically. And I think this really helps, because it's really physical. Huh? We forget this factor, but it's really physical when you are 40 minutes holding in the air the instrument on stage nonstop, because there is no break. It's tough in a way, so it requires preparation. So that was my preparation for that competition, and in general, I recommend for competitions. And for concert, I would say I try not to be too much overwhelmed by my anxiety. I practice slowly, passage, moment, unless I have the time to play more, but slowly. Slowly, it really helps. A question of reflex. At the same time, it's like a therapy, because when you play slowly, you calm yourself. You observe more what you do. Your fingers know more where to go, how to place themselves, etc. So playing slowly is very important. Before a concert, yes, I try to do that.
Yeah, good advice. Well, thank you so much for speaking
with
me.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahroseman.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support this series, that would be wonderful. Or you can browse the collection of merch with a very cool, unique, and expressive design from artist Steffi Kelly, with notebooks, mugs, shirts, phone cases, and more. I'm an independent podcaster, and I really do need the help of my listeners. All the links are in the show notes. Have a wonderful week.